cowered down, some leapt into the sea, and some stood still, watching in a wonder that surpassed fear. The dragon hovered above them. 90 feet, maybe, was he from tip to tip of his vast membranous wings that shone in the new sunlight like gold-shot smoke, and the length of his body was no less, but lean, arched like a greyhound, clawed like a lizard, and snake-scaled. Along the narrow spine went a row of jagged darts, like rose thorns in shape, but at the hump of the back 3 feet in height, and so diminishing that the last at the tail tip was no longer than the blade of a little knife. These thorns were gray, and the scales of the dragon were iron gray, but there was a glitter of gold in them. His eyes were green and slitted. Moved by fear for his people to forget fear for himself, the chief of the raft folk came from his shelter with a harpoon such as they used in the hunt of whales. It was longer than himself and pointed with a great barbed point of ivory. Poising it on his small, sinewy arm, he ran forward to gain the impetus to hurl it up and strike the dragon's narrow, light-mailed belly that hung above the raft. Arryn, waking from stupor, saw him, and plunging forward, caught his arm and came down in a heap with him and the harpoon. "Would you anger him with your silly pins?" he gasped. "Let the Dragon Lord speak first." The chief, half the wind knocked out of him, stared stupidly at Arryn, and at the mage, and at the dragon. But he did not say anything. And then the dragon spoke. None there but Ged, to whom it spoke, could understand it, for dragons speak only in the old speech, which is their tongue. The voice was soft and hissing, almost like a cat's when he cries out softly in rage, but huge, and there was a terrible music in it. Whoever heard that voice stopped still and listened. The mage answered briefly, and again the dragon spoke, poising above him on slight shifting wings, even, thought Arryn, like a dragonfly poised on the air. Then the mage answered one word, "Memeas, I will come," and he lifted up his staff of yew wood. The dragon's jaws opened, and a coil of smoke escaped them in a long arabesque. The gold wings clapped like thunder, making a great wind that smelled of burning, and he wheeled and flew hugely to the north. It was quiet on the rafts, with a little thin piping and wailing of children, and women comforting them. Men climbed aboard out of the sea somewhat shamefaced, and the forgotten torches burned in the first rays of the sun. The mage turned to Arryn. His face had a light in it that might have been joy or stark anger, but he spoke quietly. "Now we must go, lad. Say your farewells and come." He turned to thank the chief of the raft folk and bid him farewell, and then went from the great raft across three others, for they still lay close in gathered for the dancing, till he came to the one to which Lookfar was tied. So the boat had followed the raft town in its long, slow drift into the south, rocking along empty behind. But the children of the open sea had filled its empty cask with hoarded rainwater and made up its stock of provisions, wishing thus to honor their guests, for many of them believed Sparrowhawk to be one of the great ones, who had taken on the form of a man instead of the form of a whale. When Arryn joined him, he had the sail up. Arryn loosed the rope and leapt into the boat, and in that instant she veered from the raft and her sail stiffened as in a high wind, though only the breeze of sunrise blew. She heeled, turning, and sped off northward on the dragon's track, light as a blown leaf on the wind. When Arryn looked back, he saw the raft town as a tiny scattering, little sticks and chips of wood afloat, the shelters and the torch poles. Soon these were lost in the dazzle of early sunlight on the water. Lookfar fled forward. When her bow bit the waves, fine crystal spray flew, and the wind of her going flung back Arryn's hair and made him squint. Under no wind of earth could that small boat have sailed so fast, unless in storm, and then it might have foundered in the storm waves. This was no wind of earth, but the mage's word and power that sent her forth so fleet. He stood a long time by the mast, with watchful eyes. At last he sat down in his old place by the tiller, laying one hand upon it, and looked at Arryn. "That was Orm Embar," he said, "the dragon of Celador, kin to that great Orm who slew Aerith Akby and was slain by him." "Was he hunting, lord?" said Arryn, for he was not certain whether the mage had spoken to the dragon in welcome or in threat. "Hunting me. What dragons hunt, they find. He came to ask my help." He laughed shortly. "And that's a thing I would not believe if any told me, that a dragon turned to a man for help. And of them all, that one. He is not the oldest, though he is very old, but he is the mightiest of his kind. He does not hide his name, as dragons and men must do. He has no fear that any can gain power over him. Nor does he deceive in the way of his kind. Long ago, on Celador, he let me live, and he told me a great truth. He told me how the rune of the kings might be refound. To him I